Good morning, everyone. As you said, I do have a strange accent. I don't care. To me, all of you guys speak strange. I pronounce words like banana. You guys say banana. Doesn't bother me at all. Although I go home and I get it in the neck because apparently I'm defiling my mother tongue. But yes, I'm all the way from the UK. Strange being in Northern Ontario. I've traveled a lot of miles in the last 18 months or so. This is my first real time up north, but I have to say it's great to be here with you all. And it's a real privilege just to be able to speak and share a couple of things that have kind of come up for me the last year and tell you all a little bit about Good News on the Move, maybe get you interested, and just kind of tell you some things that happened to me last year and the way the Lord's been working in my lives and in the lives of a lot of the people that I know and a lot of the guys on the team that I've been working with. Now, 5 years ago, I did not envision myself being in North America. 5 years ago, I wasn't even walking with the Lord very well. I was raised in a Christian home. I had the privilege of having some great Christian parents, and they raised me very well, but I really didn't care. I was 9 years old when I was saved. The thing which spoke to me in my salvation was the fact that I had no peace in my life, even as a nine-year-old. I was talking to a guy a few weeks ago who's 23 and has no peace in his life. He has no fulfillment, no recognition of anything in his life. And the wonderful thing about the gospel is that it brings peace. So many times in the New Testament, the gospel is described as the gospel of peace. Jesus Christ is the Prince of Peace. And that was what spoke to me when I was 9 years old. And that was when I accepted the Lord as my Savior and asked Him into my life. But after that, I didn't go anywhere. I was less than a mediocre Christian. I give you that. I went with the flow. I went with the tide. I showed up to all the meetings. I knew how to dress. I knew what to say. I could participate very well and fool everyone into thinking that I was doing just great. But at the same time, I was leading a massive double life. I don't want to talk about it because I don't like it very much. But I look at where I am now and the way in which God has blessed me so much. And the way that God has been so merciful to me, and I just stand back and give Him thanks for that. But 5 years ago, my dad made a call to this man down here in the corner, Jabe. And he booked him to come to Eastbourne for November 2005 for a week of meetings, a week of teaching meetings in our assembly. And that was it. I never actually found out about it until early on in 2005, but in November, Jabe came. And we had a youth weekend very similar to this. And then he spent the week with us, ministering and teaching us. And he spent some time in my home. And while he was there, he told me about Good News on the Move. And it was the Thanksgiving break of the first year. And he was telling me all about Good News on the Move. And it was something which I was very interested in. I was coming up to finishing high school in the May of 2006. Didn't know what I wanted to do. Some of the wonderful plans which I'd made for myself had pretty much come to nothing, which I actually thank the Lord for, because otherwise I'd never be here. But I was kind of interested, but, you know, Jabe left after about a week or so, and I got back on with normal life. And then at Christmas, a couple of months later, one of the team members showed up. One of the first-year team members, Mike Donahue, he was dating a girl from my assembly. They got married this last summer, and I had no idea who Mike was. I knew there was this guy coming from the States. I had no idea he was on Good News on the Move. And I found this out over Christmas, and we spent a lot of time talking about it. We spent a lot of time just discussing things about evangelism in people's lives. And January 06, I became convinced that this was something which I would be very interested in doing for the Lord and something the Lord could have me to do. So January 2006, I started to very seriously pray about coming on Good News on the Move. I would have just finished high school. I would have been the eligible age to come on the team. And it made sense to me. I looked into going to university to study economics and finance, and it hadn't worked there. No doors were opening for work. But the door for coming to the States stayed open all the time. Stayed open in a big way, especially when I had to apply for a visa and applied for the wrong visa, which could have got me cancelled and not turn up in the States for quite a while. But the Lord overruled in everything, and August last year, I guess, I came to the States. I came for the sole purpose of Good News on the Move. I didn't know what to expect. Before that time, I had never really done evangelism. I had never really been involved in witnessing in any way in my life. And I came with my life as a blank page, really. I had no idea what the year was going to teach me. I had no idea what the Lord was going to do with my life afterwards. And I just came willing to be used, I guess, of the Lord. And I thank the Lord that he's seen fit to use me in different ways throughout this year. But something like Good News on the Move is very radical in a lot of people's eyes. Jabe was telling us about the New Testament. You see people going around, young men in groups going and sharing the gospel in cities and going and working together. Well, this is essentially what Good News on the Move is. They take a group of 10 guys for a school year, for September through June, and they train them in evangelism, in discipleship, and in different leadership things. This was my team. This were the guys I was with last year. My 9 other brothers, I guess now, we stay in touch a lot. And basically, the way last year worked out is we started as a team, but we finished as family. I'm closer to these guys than a lot of people in my life. And it was an experience never to be forgotten. The lessons which came from the year, the way in which our friendships grew, and the way in which we're able to serve the Lord together brings you together. You speak to people who have maybe served in the war. They're closest to the people who they served alongside with. And as you fight in a battle, you become very close to your comrades. And that's the way that Good News worked for us. But this team, essentially what we do is we take a road trip for 10 months. But a road trip with a purpose. We don't just go to travel the states. We go with the express purpose of wanting to A, help assemblies in evangelism. We go with B, the purpose of training the guys on the team. And we also want to see a change from what you could describe as scattering the seed, random farming, in a small way, to big time farming. Like, there's 300 million people here in the States, so they've got to be reached somehow. And like Jay was saying about geometric progression, it's the hope that if each one of these 10 guys can then take another 10 guys, within 2 years or so, you have 100 guys who have all been trained in the same way. It's geometric progression. It works really well. But basically the team, 10 guys, you have to be college age to come. So probably like 18 and up, finished high school. Let me tell you something, right? You see this team? No. You got me. I'm from England. Sam's from India. Dan Scott's from Canada. Armand's from Armenia. James and Mike are both Norwegian descent. And Scott is a little bit Scottish. Which is kind of funny, but we won't go there. Now, how in the world can you take 10 guys from very distinct backgrounds, with no two of us having the same personality, with all of our different quirks and differences, and put them together and expect them to work as a team? The key grounding for all of us was the Lord. There's no way in which we would have come so close last year as we did if we had not had the Lord in each of our lives. And last year, you know, it was amazing to see the way that the Lord brought us together and united us as a team. Like I said, we were family. We were close. Not just because you live within 2 feet of each other for every day for 10 months, but you're really close. And in the Psalms, the Lord says that where brethren dwell in unity, there he commands a blessing. He's pleased to bless. And we saw that in so many ways last year. At times when it was going tough, you rely on each other and you're able to get each other through the difficult times. You're able to help each other out with different things. And we basically, if you look at this map over here, this, come and take a look at this afterwards. Okay, this will give you an idea of the way we travel. We have a red line which maps out the first year, the year I wasn't on. The black line, for me, we travel clean out west to California and back again and up through the East Coast. So we put a lot of miles on the clock. I think we stopped at about 22 different assemblies. And each of those places is unique for us. There's different circumstances you get brought into. There's different people you meet. And every single one of those goes into making you what you become. So we go into a town and we roll up. I haven't got any pictures up here, but we have a big 40-foot RV that has a big shrink wrap on it. You go to the supermarket and you buy some kind of food. It's got a big shrink wrap on the side of it. That's basically what we took to an RV. And we got this shrink wrap on the side. So basically we've made an RV a floating billboard. And you go cruising down the highway, and on one side it's got a picture of a fruit basket and an open Bible in the background. And in the foreground it says, "Enjoying God's blessings, now try his book." On the other side there's a shot of a constellation of stars in the background. And in the front of that it says, "Creation shows God's power, Calvary shows his love." Now, as we go around the States, we talk to a lot of people. We interact with thousands of people, but there's probably more thousands have seen the vehicles that we never get to speak to than we know. Every single person who drove past us on the interstate, every single person who drives past the chapel where the bus is parked up in the city. And, you know, this is where it comes down to using all means to get the gospel out to people. There's a means there. It shows people that we're serious. It shows people that, you know, this is serious enough to us that we're prepared to go to all this expense to tell people about it. So we'd roll up in town, and basically a basic week with Genome would be that we get a lot of teaching in classes to train us. We have six teachers that travel with us. On this picture, Jabe, obviously, and the man on the right-hand side, the bald man, is Jerry Denny. He's from North Carolina. He's also one of the guys who works a lot with the team. We have Rex Trogdon, Scott DeGroff, Dave Hammond, and a man called Andy Hilton, who would be the six teachers who rotate in and out with us in the year. And from these six men, the guys this year have, and I had last year, a phenomenal amount of Bible teaching given to us. And it was amazing. You go through book studies. We would go through topical studies. We would go through studies in evangelism, studies in discipleship, and basically we would spend 8 hours a week in class, usually 2 hours each morning, and then spend the afternoons doing evangelism. Now, like Jabe said, God isn't boring. There's lots of different ways to do it, and we found lots of very different ways. One of the most normal ones would be door-to-door visitation. A couple of guys go to a door, you take a neighborhood, you have a special gift pack with a verse and a CD and some goodies in a bag, and you go and take it to the door with the aim to try to get people into conversation. You come up against some very interesting people at the doors. Last week, we were down in Kentucky, and one of the guys came back from one afternoon doing door-to-door, and he had a shotgun pulled on him. A little bit frightening, but, you know, we've had people grab one of the guys by the throat while he was at the door. We had people keel over, like just fall down flat. Why? We don't know. But this is the type of situations you're presented with. But it's interesting that the way you go around the doors, you never know what you're going to run up against. Like Jabe said, there's one of the guys who teaches us, Dave Hammond. He lives for door-to-door. He's a really great guy. And he does see it as a game show. Like behind one of these doors somewhere, there's a prize. And that prize is going to be the person who gets saved today when I share the gospel with them. And you know, that's the great thing. You see the Lord working even as you work down the street. You work down the houses. So many times it's happened to me that you go through the houses. Maybe there's no one there. Maybe there's someone in every... I've had situations where you walk down the street and every single person has slammed the door on you. You get through like 5-6 houses like that, it gets pretty discouraging. But you get to the end of the street and there's the lady who walks out and says, you know, my husband just killed himself. And my life's falling apart. Can you help me? How does that work? Well, we couldn't have seen that. There was a lady in Green Bay who, she didn't actually speak to one of the guys on the door, but they left the packet hanging over her handlebar on the door, and she had, I think it was her next door neighbor just committed suicide, her partner committed suicide, and her daughter attempted suicide. Her life was falling apart. She was considering suicide herself. And she was in the kitchen, I think, ready to commit suicide, but decided that she needed some fresh air. So instead of walking out the back of her house, she walked out the front. And as she walked out the front door, there was one of the packets hanging on the door. There was a verse in there. There was a CD called Hope in the Storms of Life. She took the packet, she read it, she listened to the CD, And she came out to one of the gospel meetings we had that night. I haven't heard about the lady since, but, you know, this is the way that God orders stuff so much of the time. We don't see it. How could I say that, well, you know, I think if I just leave this seat saw packet on this door, you know, I kind of feel that this person's really going to be needing it in such and such a way. We don't know what the Lord will do with what we put out there for him, but it's his work and he's pleased to bless it. So door-to-door presents a lot of interesting things. We spend a lot of time on college campuses, speaking with students, having literature tables. We often have kind of seminar-type sessions in the evening of Japes with the team. We have an event called Stump the Preacher, where we invite students to come along and field questions to Jabe about different topics. It's just different forms of being able to share the gospel with people. And I remember being on a college campus. It was actually in Utah. We spent a week just north of Salt Lake City in Utah, heavy Mormon country. And we're in a little town called Ogden, and there's a college campus there called Weber State University. Well, one of the young guys in the assembly, he attends that college, and they had us the ability to park our two vehicles, the RV and the Sprinter van, in the center of campus all week. And this campus was set on a hillside. Basically, you came down, there was a set of stairs going down and across in a big, like I guess a square. And basically, every single student in that campus to get either from dorms to classes or between classes had to come through the quad where our buses were and where we were waiting for them with CDs. Now, it's an amazing open door right there. You know, we got a lot of the students, I think we went through close to 5,000-6,000 CDs that week. But the students there would have seen the buses, they would have seen the CDs. And in that week, you can imagine it was a tough week being in Mormon country. But I remember there being a young guy that week who walked up to one of us, took a CD, he walked away and he came back. He spoke to a guy called Eric Smith. And I think Eric spent about 2 hours maybe talking with this guy. He had been a Mormon. He had come back from his missionary journey totally dissatisfied, really couldn't care less about anything. And his parents were very pressurizing on him, but he knew there had to be something more to life. And Eric spent 2 hours with him talking about things. And as a result of that, that young man put his faith in Christ. Now, is it worth being on a college campus for 3 days with the expense of 5,000 CDs to see one person saved? I think so. It's totally worth it. Just to see someone else, some life plucked from hell for the glory of God, it's totally worth it. And, you know, the year's been so full of situations like that. I have a whole list of stories here. I have no idea where they're going to fit in. But I could just, like, go and go, so I won't. That's Jabe's job, to keep going over time. So yeah, well we've been outside of Walmart with literature tables. We do a lot of outreach in downtown areas, very inventive outreaches, which different assemblies come up to. Basically, we go to an assembly and we like to say, we'll do outreach wherever you want to do it, provided you're prepared to do the follow-up afterwards, because we don't want to come into town and do all the evangelism and leave it at that. Our aim is to see assemblies stirred up in evangelism to continue themselves, but also so that they can continue working with the contacts we've made. We can be in a town and make maybe 20, 30 good contacts in a week that want to be followed up with, that want to have a Bible study or a return visit for someone to sit down with them and speak and take them through what the gospel is from the Bible. And so we want to do outreach in areas where people are ready to do the follow-up. So we've had some interesting ones. We were in Colorado the week after Thanksgiving last year, and there was a Christmas parade in Grand Junction. So we decked out our bus with lights, and we put it through this Christmas parade. More people we reached there in maybe the college campus and door-to-door work we'd done that week. We've been in North Carolina, and we spent a whole Saturday on the beach playing volleyball so that we could reach the teenagers on the beach, which the assembly had a burden for. We've been to flea markets, just places where there's the opportunity to get in there and to be able to share the gospel with people. You know, one of the neatest places I think I've ever been has been to a care home. We were in Sioux Falls at the end of last year, and we were getting ready for a big final outreach that we were having. And people were coming in over the weekend, and we started doing a little bit of evangelism before kind of like our big push starting Monday morning. And it was Sunday afternoon, and we'd been going out door to door, but it was raining. And we were kind of a little bit discouraged, and there were some girls there that had traveled down. Oh, great. There were some girls that had traveled down, I think, 40 hours from Alberta on a Greyhound bus to come to Sioux Falls. And they said, you know, we want to do something this afternoon. We have to do something. You know, is there a care home or somewhere around here where we can go and, like, do a service or something for people? So we basically got a Yellow Pages and went through all the care homes. And we basically called the first care home and said, we'd love to have you come. The people who are supposed to come this afternoon have canceled. So if you can come and do something for us, that'd be great. So a group of maybe 5 to 10 guys and girls went to the care home. They put on a little service of people, visited with some of the people afterwards. And that was it. We walked away. And during the week, one of the McKenzie girls got a real burden for one of the old ladies she'd spoken to in the nursing home that week. So she picked up one of the God's Answers to Man's Questions booklets and a CD, and she went back to see this little old lady, like 80, 90 years old, I think. And Thursday afternoon, she went to visit her, and after that visit, that lady put her faith in Christ. So bad weather hinders you in one area. The Lord opens the door to go into a nursing home. Why are we in the nursing home? Well, there's one person in that nursing home that's ready to receive the gospel. So many times it's come up this year. And, you know, just things like... All right, so before Christmas last year, we went to Las Vegas. All right, Las Vegas, don't go there, please. As much as all the hype is, it's really not worth it. Unless you're going to go there to preach the gospel, then definitely go there. But we were in Las Vegas. This was our last week before Christmas. Some of us hadn't been home. I hadn't been home for 5 months, and I was going home to the UK for Christmas. And Las Vegas was a tough week for several reasons. Just the very fact that the other name for Las Vegas is Sin City gives you some kind of idea about the type of place which it is. And in Las Vegas, we came probably closest as a team in that week because we were so conscious of all the evil that was around us, and we knew that we had to stay close together if we were to be of any use for the Lord in that week. So we came in on Monday evening, and we had a bit of a downtime Monday evening. We were just kind of getting ourselves set up in the RV park, and Eric Smith, again, he went to do some laundry in the laundry room, and there was some people in there, and Eric is a great guy for doing magic tricks, especially with ropes and stuff. So he whips out this little 3-rope trick we have and asks these people if they'd like to see a rope trick. And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. We've got nothing else to do. So they watch him through this rope trick, and he presents the gospel to them and carries on talking, and he's going for like maybe an hour and a half or so, and they gradually leave. But there's one girl there from Australia who'd arrived the same day as us. And she stayed the whole way, and eventually everyone else left. But this girl stayed, and Eric and her talked for hours. And again, first night in Las Vegas, we didn't know what to expect. But, you know, like the Lord said to Paul in Corinth, I have much people in this city. And that lady that evening put her trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. How? Well, Eric was just ready to be used by the Lord. He was there and prepared to speak for the Lord when he needed to. And there was a lady saved. We were going out down Las Vegas Boulevard passing out CDs to people. And we ran into David Blaine, filming his latest TV show, which was going to be aired in May. Again, we got to give CDs to all of David Blaine's crew, David Blaine himself, and we got to be able to witness to them. We were in an IHOP restaurant one night for dinner, and the waitress came to us to bring us our food, and we'll often ask waitresses, say, you know, is there something we can pray for you about? We're Christians, we're going to thank God for providing this food for us, and if there's something we can pray for you about, we'd like to. And this lady, she was a little bit older lady called Dana, and she very respectfully was like, oh, well, that's very nice, but no, thank you, I'm doing just great. So we prayed, and we were just eating away at our meal, just talking, and she came back. And she said, you know, you can't pray for anything for me, but please pray for a guy called Alejandro. He was a chef here. And last night, he was involved in a hit-and-run accident. He was walking his daughter, his little four-year-old daughter, through her neighborhood, and they were going to cross over the street, and she ran ahead, and there was a car speeding through the neighborhood that was going to hit his daughter. He ran after his daughter, pushed her out of the way, and was hit by the car instead. He's in hospital, and he's undergoing surgery. He had surgery this afternoon. He's having it this evening. And we really don't know if he's going to be okay, so maybe you could pray for him. We'd really appreciate that. So we did. We stopped, all of us, what we were doing, and we prayed for him. And we had Scott DeGroff with us that week teaching. And he was sitting next to me, and he elbowed me in the ribs. He's like, you know, this is great. This is a gospel presentation dropped into your lap. This is the perfect illustration of substitution. I was like, yeah, I can see that. So he's like, you know, we should go and visit this guy in the hospital. I was like, wow, I've never done a visit before, but I could do that. So Scott and I, in a couple of days, we went to the hospital to go and visit him. We walk up to ICU. Scott's a funny guy. Jay knows Scott. And if any of you guys know Scott DeGroff, he's just like, okay, this is the way it's going to be. If you want to get into ICU, you're only going to get in if your family or a priest. So kind of dress neat and bring a big Bible, and we'll just wing it as we go. So we walk up to ICU, Scott presses the buzzer, and they're like, hi, we're here to see Alejandro Santos. And the nurse is like, oh, are you family? Or he's like, we're ministers. I was like, we're ministers? Scott's like, yeah, I'll give you the reference for it later. So anyway, the nurse is like, okay, yeah, come on in. So the automatic doors swing open, and we walk into ICU, and this nurse meets us, brings us to Alejandro, tells us a little bit about how he's doing and stuff. And she's like, you can't stay long with him, but we induced him in a coma. He can hear everything you'll say. So we just stood by his bed, and we just told him who we were and why we come to visit him. Scott gave just a real simple gospel presentation to him, and we left some literature with him and for his family. And we walked away. We never saw him again. Now, is that worth it? Well, I don't know what's become of that. Those pieces of literature we left, maybe the nursing staff who needed them got them, maybe they got to his family. Maybe Alejandro himself got saved. But for going in there for all of that trouble, it'll be worth it if one person got saved from a CD that was left there, or from one of the leaflets that we left. Well, I'll tell you something else. As we left, we're driving back to meet up with the other guys, and we drive past the restaurant where we had met Dana. And Scott says, you know, we should really go and just tell her how Alejandro's doing so they know. I'm sure it's kind of difficult for them to keep up with stuff. So this is 2 o'clock in the afternoon, busy time in IHOP. And we walk in, they were like, is Dana here? They're like, yeah, we'll just get it for you. So she comes out. She's carrying 2 armfuls of food. And she's like, hey, I remember you guys. What are you doing? And we're like, oh, we went to see Alejandro in the hospital. And in the middle of IHOP at 2 o'clock, she stood absolutely dead still. And she just looked at us, and she welled up with tears in her eyes and was like, you know, I never thought you guys would actually go and see him. You said you would, but I never expected you to come through on what you said. No one does in this city. All this city cares about is exploiting people for what they can get out of them. Now, we didn't get an opportunity to witness to Dana, but by displaying the love of Christ through what we did, maybe that spoke louder to her than, like, trying to present the gospel like you would do door to door. There's so many different ways which you can present the gospel to people. And, I'll tell you one other thing, right? From Las Vegas, when we're driving in on Monday, you don't know who sees the bus. Well, we were going to leave Las Vegas on the Sunday. It was the Saturday evening. And one of the ladies in the RV park comes up to us. And she's like, you know, I just wanted to tell you guys how much of an encouragement you guys are to me. We were like, oh, okay. So we got talking to her, and she was a Christian. She had been saved 6 weeks before we came into town. She had worked as a prostitute. She was a drug addict, an alcoholic, had an abusive marriage, and she was saved 6 weeks before we came to town. And she was like, you know, I've been going to rehab to get out of my drugs and my drink, and Monday I was having a really bad day. And I was walking out, and people were just discouraging me, and I really felt that Las Vegas needed the gospel and needed the Lord. And she's like, I was walking through the hallway of the hospital, which is right next to the interstate, and I just looked out, and there were your buses driving down the highway. And I was like, Lord, if these people are coming to to Las Vegas to share the gospel with people, thank you so much. I just pray that you'd like let me come into contact with them. So she comes to work Tuesday morning, and there we are, parked in the middle of her RV lot. You know, nothing happens by chance, right? And, you know, so we can speak to unbelievers and believers alike. Have a way to be an encouragement too. I mentioned nothing happens by chance. Our first stop last year was Oxford, Pennsylvania. And on a Monday morning, at about 10 o'clock in the morning, a man armed with a shotgun and a high-powered rifle walked into an army schoolhouse and killed 6 little girls. Monday afternoon, the genome team turned up in Oxford, Pennsylvania, 1.5 miles away from that little army schoolhouse. Green Bay, Wisconsin, this year, we were there the second week in October. The weekend before we arrived, there was an off-duty sheriff's deputy who shot and killed 6 high school students in a little town called Crandon, 3 hours north of Green Bay. In the first year in Slidell, Louisiana, the team were due to go there, and a few weeks before they went, Hurricane Katrina hit. Now, do these events happen just purely coincidental that we happen to be around after things like this? You know, I can remember speaking to people in Oxford that say, you know, well, if there's a loving God, why on earth does this happen? So many times, that's what the question comes to. And, you know, God has the ability of putting people exactly where he wants them to be. And I have no doubt that we were supposed to be in Oxford that week after the army school shootings. I have no doubt that the team on the first year was supposed to be in Slidell so they could help people who have been affected by Hurricane Katrina. I have no doubt that we were supposed to be in Crandon either. Crandon, there's less than 2,000 people living in Crandon, and every single person in that town probably had some connection to those students that were shot. I met the grandmother of one of the girls who was shot, and she couldn't believe what we were doing. We were going out and taking a little CD called Hope in the Storms of Life around people's doors. And we were just taking it and leaving it on people's doors in little bags, and she put on a very brave face. But it's interesting how you can read people through their eyes. And you could tell she was hurting. And as you met people in that town that week, you could tell that so many people in that city were hurting because of everything that had happened. But I'll tell you something else. I never had anyone reject a piece of literature which I gave to them that week. I'm not sure if any of us did. And people were just so appreciative of what we were trying to do, trying to tell these people about that there is hope no matter when things seem to fall apart. And I can remember speaking to a cop there, and he came up to stop me from going around the houses, and he was like, you know, so you can't do this. It's like, well, you know, we're just a group of Christians from Grand Rapids. We wanted to come up here and leave just a little bit of hope with people because, you know, stuff like this has the potential to take away everybody's hope in life. And he was like, you know, thank you guys. Carry on. Open doors, right? Open doors to carry on. Anyway, my time's eating up here. Yes, please. All right, there's some little leaflets we've got for you all to have. Some of the guys around here have little leaflets we've put together for you all, just with some information about good news on the move, but also some information about a new team which we're looking to start up in Canada. Now, we've seen such an amazing amount of blessing throughout the states from good news on the move, the blessing not only to the unsaved, but to believers themselves and to the guys that have been on the team, that Lord willing, in March of this coming year, we hope to start this team, Cross Canada Cruisers. And essentially, the same concept is the same as Good News on the Move. Taking guys and training them in evangelism, and, you know, looking training guys in leadership and discipling. But the way that we do it is going to be very different. It's going to be very unique. We're not going to roll into town with a big RV and a big Sprinter van. We're going to roll into town with 1950s cars. Every fisherman has different bait for different situations. Our bait this time is going to be 1950s cars. And what we hope to have is a team starting out in British Columbia and a team starting out in Prince Edward Island, and both working east and west to meet together in Ontario. Now, the time that we hope to be able to finish this would be sometime around the end of October, or the start of October next year. After running from around about the end of April, we plan to have an inverse school year, so you don't get the summer months off, but the winter months would be off instead, because you know you can't go much south in Canada without getting snow. So what we hope to have is two teams of guys. We're looking for guys at the moment. So guys, if you're finishing high school, or you're wondering what the Lord would have you to do with your life, then think about Cross Canada Cruises. I can honestly say to you that before coming on Good News on the Move, if there was such a thing in England as the American dream, that was what I was looking for. I wanted to be successful. I wanted money. I wanted security in my life. At 16, I was offered a job by an investment bank. At 17, I was interested in going to Cambridge and Oxford University. By the time I was coming up on 18, I guess, all of those plans have been totally confounded. Why? Well, I think it was so I could come on Good News on the Move. Last year, I could have been somewhere in college studying for an economics degree. I could have been working somewhere in a firm, getting some type of job or career path underway. But I would not trade any of that for Good News on the Move. The experiences that it gave me, the people that I met, the way that I saw the Lord work around me and in my own life has just been breathtaking, to be honest with you. The way in which just to see the Lord moving just really just confounds you. It makes you remember just how small you are and how big God is. And how that truly nothing is impossible with God. And how that there's no situation too difficult for God. Yes, we get put in situations where we don't particularly feel that comfortable. I had never really knocked on a door to go and share the gospel with someone before coming on Good News on the Move. The first day I went, I was terrified. I still am, to be honest with you. Jay was saying about being a chicken. I'm right there. Two chickens together works pretty good. So, but I've just seen so much of the Lord working this year that I'm convinced that if I'm there for Him to use, then He'll be pleased to use us. If you're there for the Lord to use, if you're ready to be used by the Lord and willing to be used, however, whatever way that might be, then He'll use you. Making yourself available to the Lord is something great to be able to do. So anyway, Cross Canada Cruises, we've got several cars already. We're in purchasing another few. But Lord willing, we plan to start the team at the end of March. The basic structure, like I said, will be the same as Good News on the Move. There'll be an orientation period, a little bit longer, 6 weeks, where the guys will be not only having classes and things, but also will be being trained in mechanics and in bodywork, so that the cars can be maintained on the road. And in the team which we're looking for, we're looking for young men who are willing to learn, that have a love for the Lord, a love for lost souls, and young men that are well reported of as well by their own assemblies. Young men who want to see the Lord working, want to live their lives for the Lord. And you know, there's a lot of opportunities with two teams. There's lots of spaces open for guys. So Jabe can give you a lot better information on this than I can. But if you'd be interested, I have more information on my computer. Jabe has more information with him, which we can give you. We'd love to be able just to tell you a little bit more and to talk to you about some stuff. But just think about what it would mean to do that. A lot of the people have come up to the Genome team when I was on the team. I think, you know, it's fantastic that you guys have given this year of your life. And yes, it's true. We put a year of our lives on hold to travel with Good News on the Move. But all of us guys last year, and I know all of the 3 years, they would say that this isn't a year of our lives. This is the rest of our lives. Duffy said this morning about being sold out to God. Well, it wasn't Duffy, it was Steve. Being sold out to God, it's totally worth it to spend and be spent by the Lord. Yes, it's exhausting. Yes, it's very trying. But there's no greater reward that you could ever have. You know, I was looking in my life to be great. I wanted a name for myself. But you know, the Bible has a very different definition of greatness to what the world does. The world would say that to be great, you have to climb up the ladder. To be great, you have to, you know, be cutthroat in business. You have to make as much as you can. Don't care about other people. The Bible says exactly the opposite, that to be great in God's eyes, you have to go down, taking the servant's place. And what better example do we have in that than the Lord Jesus? The God of heaven coming to earth and being incarnate in a human body and willing to take the servant's place, the lowly, humble place here on earth. Isn't that an example worth following? My mom, when I came on Good News on the Move, she gave me a little quote, and I was just reminded of it, and I'd like to read it to you because this has meant so much to me. It's a quote by J.N. Darby, and it says, "True greatness, say little, serve all, pass on. This is true greatness, to serve unnoticed and work unseen. Oh, the joy of having nothing and being nothing and seeing nothing but a living Christ in glory and being careful for nothing but his interests down here." And it's his interest down here that we're here for. It's not ourselves. It's not anything to do with me. You know, Romans 12, 1 and 2, Paul beseeches the Romans to present your bodies a living sacrifice. But the last two words of that first verse have been the ones which have totally captivated me. He says that this living sacrifice is your reasonable service. Your reasonable service. I was reading an autobiography of a guy called C.T. Studd, and at the front there's a little quote that he has, and it says, "If Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice is too great for me to make for him. No sacrifice is too great for me to make for him." And there have been times this past year when it's hurt to put self out of the picture, when it's hurt to put your own preferences aside. But it's only been a short-term hurt, because the way in which the Lord uses that, you just say, why didn't I give it up sooner? Why didn't I get sold out to the Lord earlier than I ever did? Like, I look at the time between when I was saved and when I tried to start going places for the Lord, I had 8 years. 8 years of nothing in my life. No growth, no interest. And I had absolutely nothing. Why didn't I sell out to the Lord sooner? Why didn't I just present my body like Romans says? I ask you, are you sold out to the Lord? You know, Jim Elliot once said that, he says, sacrifice, let me see if I can find this. "A life cannot be surrendered in a day. It takes a lifetime to surrender a life, but it's a daily process." It's a daily process. Salvation's once for all. Surrender is all the time. And are you sold out to the Lord? Are you prepared to let him use you no matter what? You know, I've been reading through Acts a few times over the last few days, and I've just been struck by the way in which the Christians were willing to go wherever the Lord would have them. Paul, when he met the Lord on the Damascus Road, the first words out of his mouth was, "Lord, what wilt thou have me to do?" That's the right attitude to start with. What would the Lord have me to do? Ananias, when he's told by the Lord to go and meet Paul, he didn't know who he was going to meet, but the Lord called him and he said, "Behold, I am here, Lord." Now, understandably, he was nervous when God told him to go and meet this man who was the largest killer of Christians in the whole of the known world at the time. I would be too. But his attitude was, "I'm here, Lord. If you want to use me, I'm here." And are you there? If the Lord wants to use you, Can he have you? My time's up. I guess we got lunch, but maybe we'll just close in a word of prayer, and then I'll pass it over to Duffy.